thought. We do not want to be longer than what we should be. So, good afternoon to all of you, honorable members. Welcome to Acting DG of the Security Agency. It's nice to have you in your presence. We have our expert from the state, senior state law advisor again, who will be present with us. Process this bill as much as is necessary. He shall be with us. I don't see the Mr. Ferrara, but I'm sure he will put in an appearance when at the appropriate time. We have Mr. Robin Chandler from the Minister's Office assisting the DG. Before we get into the substance, just report back there is an apology from the minister who unfortunately is attending an apology in a way abroad on cabinet matters and has tendered his apology for today's meeting. His letter says he'll be away until the 1st of March. We found out this morning that we are in the leap year, and so that the 29th of February, too. I thought the month actually ended today. I was informed by my secretary that it's a leap year, and there will be another 29th tomorrow, which means that the first puts on Thursday, and hopefully we'll have the minister back in our meeting on Friday to perhaps deal with some of the questions that he can answer. Those are the only apologies I have. I don't think there are any other apologies. Oh, yes, the Honorable Abraham advises that he is indisposed. He will not be available to attend. Then just to report back, we had done the necessary application as instructed by the committee to have a meeting. Remember, originally the constituency period was starting from the 20th to the 13th of April. It was changed last week when the Chief Ops Forum agreed that the first week of March will be a committee week. Sorry, not the first week, the week starting from the 19th, the Monday till that Friday will be a committee week. We had originally intended to apply for permission to sit on the 20th, which was the Tuesday. John Benger had proposed that we change that to the Thursday, which would be the day after the public holiday. Permission has been granted, so that meeting will take place now on Thursday and not on the Tuesday. That is the 22nd. Thursday the 22nd, then, which will be in the constituency period. Human Rights Day is the day before the 21st. Then permission has also been granted for us to sit on the 27th, the 28th, and the 29th. That's a Tuesday, the 27th of March, Wednesday, the 28th of March, and Thursday, the 29th of March. The matter surrounding the advert which had to go out for written representations on the bill did not go out on Friday. The minister was correct. The red tape was extremely red, and the parties that had to sign and the officials that have to participate in the process to authorize the advert and also the payment for the advert. These processes were delayed, the advert did not go out. There is then a danger that we will not comply with the 14-day period, that there's got to be 14 days between the day, time that the advert appears and the time that you are wanting to close. Therefore recommended that we move, remember the closing date we had agreed on was the 14th, to move it to the 16th. The 14th was a Wednesday, and the 16th was a Friday, in order to comply. There's not much. We move it to Friday, 12 noon. The closing date, I think we, in fact, we are compelled. There's nothing more we can do. It was beyond the work and the authority of the staff of the committee. That would still then give us time to circulate the whatever representations we get. The honorable members will have it, so that when we meet on the 22nd, the Thursday, the 22nd, we hope that the honorable members will have gone through it, and then on that particular day, I would propose that we decide on the question of the public hearings, which we would have either on the 27th, the 28th, or the 29th. The advert is going to say that public hearings may be held. I think it's at that meeting then on the 22nd that we can decide, depending on what we receive in terms of the written representations, what we will do in the 20s, on the 27th, 28th, and 29th. Then the other Fridays still stand, the 2nd of March, the 9th of March, the 16th of March. We will circulate the program now because those dates are fixed. So we'll circulate the program with those dates that we have agreed to and for which we have been given permission. That then, honorable members, I don't know if there's any questions on that announcement. That then is the situation regarding the further work that we are going to do. There have been no questions then, honorable members. We left ourselves in a situation on Friday where we were pressed for time, where we took points of clarity. I know there were people that had questions that still wanted to ask further questions. We'll continue then from where we left off on Friday. If there are any members, honorable members, that have any further questions, I am reliably informed that the DG is in a position to answer such questions, even in the absence of the minister. However, where there are matters which the minister alone can answer, we expect that those matters will at least stand over till Friday or until the minister is with us again. So, honorable members, questions, and then after that we'll ask the DG to take us through from the beginning and just take us on a slower version of what happened on Friday, to take us through the clauses to draw our attention to the different pieces of legislation, perhaps to give us a better or a broader explanation as to what those legislation entail, and particularly what sections of the legislation the bill is aimed at. I don't expect that process to finish today, and perhaps we should just try to finish the first law that we are intending to amend, and that is Act 39 of 1994. So, honourable members, if there are any questions first, and then we'll go over to the DG, who will take us just on Albania. And Chair, if you recall, I did have several questions, and my list of questions is increasing as I immerse myself in material. But I wonder whether it wouldn't best serve this committee if I held those questions back until, in fact, the DG has gone through his much more detailed presentation, and that I then pose those questions at a later date. Any other questions before we deal with the proposal? And the proposal is that the DG continue with the broader briefing. So agreed, Honourable Fichler?
Agree with that. For the first time, in that we need to just to remind ourselves what was happening. We may have forgotten what were we. That we refresh.
DG, a slow process. A slow process of internship. Can you deal with, first, can you deal with the 3X to remind us, and then come and deal with the 1 Act? We don't want to finish that one because there's quite a number of amendments. That's Act 39 of 1994. Can I hand over to you, DG?
Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues, good afternoon. I will oblige to what the chairperson has directed. Although I had planned to do it slightly differently, but I will now work on the basis of the directives that have been given.
Just on that slightly different DG, what we don't want to unnecessarily prejudice you. What did you really have in mind?
No, I don't have a problem. Don't worry. I was just saying that I will work according to the directive. So I'm also queuing my people because I'm not told them. So they will know that they don't have to press things until it was purely for that purpose, not because of any other reason. Chairperson, as the minister indicated on Friday when he was doing the presentation, the essence of the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill really aimed at making amendments that are substantive on two existing acts. The first is the Intelligence Services Act 65 of 2002. And the second is the National Strategic Intelligence Act of 1994, Act 39 of 1994. The third is the Intelligence Services Oversight Act of 1994, Act 40 of 1994. First, the Intelligence Services Act. The main reason of promulgating the Intelligence Services Act.
Can I just intervene? Honourable members, there are copies being made of this presentation, and the copies are coming. Just be patient.
Yes, and I would like to apologize in advance. What I'm saying is not quite in the act, in the presentation, because I'm responding to the request. So I'm giving more information that will be found in the presentation. So the first act, Chairperson, the Intelligence Services Act of 2002, it would be recalled that following a lengthy negotiations process, South Africa concluded in 1994 that all intelligence services who appeared in a list announced by the President of the Republic at the time would be amalgamated following the negotiations into the National Intelligence Agency, Phase 1. This happened in 1994. The act that was effective at the time was the Intelligence Services Act, Act 38 of 1994. This act created the National Intelligence Agency and the South African Secret Service. These were the two departments that we had. It was part of what was at the time called the trilogy of legislation. The Intelligence Services Act, Act 38 of 1994, the Intelligence Services Control Act, as it was called at the time, which was Act 40 of 1994, and the National Strategic Intelligence Act, Act 39 of 1994. These were the three acts that comprised the Intelligence Services dispensation at the time. The aim, therefore, of the Intelligence Services Act was really to put in place the administrative infrastructure for the intelligence services in the Republic of South Africa. It created for the powers of the Directors General, it provided for powers of members, promotions, and all related matters. This act was then revisited following many commissions, ministerial intelligence review committees. The very first one, Chairperson, the House would recall, was chaired by the then advisor of the Minister of Justice and Intelligence Services, Dr. Dala Omar, Mr. Vusmuzi Pikoli. It was called the Pikoli Commission. This took place early in 1995-96. And the main aim of the committee was to review the dispensation and to satisfy ourselves that the dispensation was adequately structured. In that committee report, Jefferson, there were two main issues that were inconclusive. The first one, there was a serious concern about the agreement that had been reached during negotiations pertaining to technology. South Africans would recall, Chairperson, that there were a number of what we called super working groups that were responsible for the overview of this process. And one of these super working groups looked at the issue of technology that we use in the intelligence community. The intelligence community's technology was a shared service, which meant that the mandate of the National Intelligence Agency and the mandate of the South African Secret Service guided its operation inside and outside the country. This was a multi-party agreement following the negotiations process. So there was no intention at the time of the creation of the new intelligence dispensation of establishing our technology facilities as standalone agencies, but rather as a support service which was shared. So this issue continued to trouble ministers overseeing intelligence services. And it led, amongst other things, to the establishment of a commission which was chaired by the then Director General of the Department of Communication, Mr. Andile Ngcaba. It was called the Ngcaba Commission because, as the chairperson, he had looked at the infrastructure that was in place and he had recommended that all the technology infrastructure that was in government need to be consolidated for a number of reasons. The first one is value for money. The second one was to maximize economies of scale. The third one was focus and effective use of the capacity we had. Chairperson, it's important to go through that background because in this bill, drawing from those experiences, we have taken on board some of the issues that we raised because they then said as a guide in the policy of the government following those recommendations. This is to emphasize, Chairperson, what the Minister said, that this bill does not deal with any new policies. It is implementing what has been recommended previously and seeks to consolidate all that. This is how, Chairperson, we then saw the birth of the National Communication Center. It was a direct outcome of the recommendations of the Nqaba Commission. With your permission, Chairperson, let me then proceed to also point out that there was also an issue on the conditions of service of the intelligence community, which had not been adequately attended to, which had also been flagged by the Bikoli Commission. I'm raising this thing, Chairperson, because they have since come into the public domain. I'm not talking about that which is still classified for your comfort. That led to the establishment of a committee which had many chairpersons. At the onset, it was chaired by Mr. Magani, who then was appointed to another office and could not continue. And then I was given the responsibility to chair it. I was then appointed somewhere else, and Mr. Kalani Nechitenze was the last chairperson. This looked at the commission of service. The outcome of that committee really was the current dispensation, and then, of course, the Intelligence Services Council on conditions of service. Why am I doing this, Chairperson? Just to provide a backdrop to members that the review of 2002, which saw the enactment of the Intelligence Services Act, Act 65 of 2002, was informed by the work that had been done by all of these structures and the initiative that came from all of these ministerial intelligence review committees. And those then consolidated, at the risk of being repetitive, Chairperson, we then created a new dispensation with the organ that the Minister showed in the first slide on Friday, which was then the South African National Academy of Intelligence, the South African Secret Service, the National Intelligence Agency, the National Communications Center, the Intelligence Services on conditions of service. We then also, through Act 70, created the Concept Electronic Communications Security Pty Ltd, and of course the Office of Interception Centers that flowed from RICA. All of these were structures created in 2002. Those acts were driven by different departments, but they were all interdependent. In the main, the Electronic Communication Security Act was part of the intelligence dispensation, but the that Act 25, which was circulated on Friday, Chairperson, really was aimed at highlighting one of the issues that have now been resolved: the responsibility for the intelligence community to coordinate electronic communication security matters in government, or what they now call cyber security responsibility. This comes from the work that had started then and the work that had been done by COMSEC. The work that used to be done by the Department of Communication has now all been consolidated to be done in a collaborative manner with the State Security Agency as part of consolidating the dispensation in government. What am I saying, Chairperson? I'm saying the review that we are now doing is really taking all of these individual organizations and consolidated them under one umbrella, called the State Security Agency, which is what the Minister was explaining on Friday and to which I am now elaborating. as it was in 1994, it continued to be during the review in 2002, that the National Strategic Intelligence Act would govern the mandates of all the intelligence services in the Republic. Over and above that, Chairperson, provide for their coordination as called upon by the Constitution. This then leads to the creation of the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee. As the law stands and stood in 1994, the main responsibilities of the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee included mainly three main issues. The first is strategic intelligence assessment. This includes the production of the National Intelligence Estimate. Second, it is making recommendations to Cabinet on the national intelligence priorities. Of course, the way in which it had been put in legislation was that it's to set intelligence priorities. The other responsibility was the coordination of intelligence as an activity. As the record would show, Chairperson, this is the point the Minister explained on Friday, that in all our engagements with the oversight structures, starting with the Office of the Auditor General, there has been concern as to what is meant by the coordination of intelligence as an activity. Does it mean the coordination of forces that are held in the individual departments? Does it mean the coordination of cover structures? Does it mean the coordination of operations? Where does need to know feature in that process? What about the risk that that would pose if one area would have access to the entire system, which means that if you recruit one person in that area, you have poisoned the entire intelligence dispensation? These were the questions that were posed, and it was really arrived at collectively that not even within the same environment do we allow a single individual to have unlimited and unfettered access in all of these areas, but rather that we put systems and processes in place to make sure that internal auditors can do audits and check if the systems are working and the processes are followed and the procedures set are adhered to. We make sure that managers manage and supervisors do the supervisory work that needs to be done in those areas. But that the product is consolidated and coordinated through a process that cuts across the organization, which is a coordinated process of research and analysis of intelligence production. This is the way in which the dispensation has been structured. So this bill, Chairperson, clears that confusion. This confusion has been touched upon, Chairperson, in the report of the Matthews Commission, which is a no-status document. But it would be wrong, as the Minister said on Friday, that we have looked at everything that we had done before. We have taken on board all positive suggestions that have been done across the board, including in the non-status documents that I referred to, with a very simple aim. We want to learn from our past mistakes, improve our current performance, and put ourselves in a better position going forward to be a focused intelligence agency that delivers to the needs of the nation. So, Chairperson, there are no major changes other than the consolidation of these mandates in the National Strategic Intelligence Act. And those that were agreements through the negotiations process have also been brought on board and consolidated in the way in which the National Strategic Intelligence Act is going to be amended. The next act, Chairperson, as we already indicated, is the Intelligence Services Oversight Act, whenever you give a responsibility to the agency, you must also ensure that, because this is an equation, they say in mathematical terms, in an equation, whatever you do on the left-hand side, you must also do on the right-hand side. So in those areas where new responsibilities are being given, oversight responsibilities are also being added to the work being done by the intelligence services, by the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, the Inspector General as well. And the main really changes in this act are really the substitution of the agency for the service where the word of the service applies. We also change references to intelligence entities because those have become, in given context, obsolete. And we ensure that there is clarity as to what structure is going to be overseen. That really is the essence of the changes that are being made in the Intelligence Services Act. An act chairperson is not included in our presentation in the ComSec Act, which we are going to be repealing in totality and taking the mandate of ComSec and including it in the National Strategic Intelligence Services Act. Overall, chairperson, this is what we're doing with the main acts that directly pertain to intelligence. I need to point out, chairperson, that there are a number of other acts that are going to be consequentially amended that are included in the schedule to the bill. And those acts really would include, inter alia, the Labor Relations Act. None of the intelligence services have been governed by the Labor Relations Act. There are exemptions that are contained therein. We consolidate those exemptions and allow the State Security Agency to continue to be exempted. The Medical Schemes Act, there are particular aspects of the Act that we request the exemption of our in-house medical aid scheme in order to protect the identity of our members that we deal with. And then there are other acts like the Public Service Act, Financial Intelligence Center Act, Witness Protection, the Institution of Legal Proceedings Against Certain Organs of State Act of 2002, the Government Employees Pension Law, the Medical Schemes Act, as I've already pointed out, and of course the soon to be repealed Protection of State Information Act, the Act 84 of 1982. All of those, they are consequential amendments, really taking away references to the obsolete structures that have now been consolidated into the State Security Agency. May I stop here for now, Chairperson, without going into the details, unless if you want me to then start addressing the acts in the detail, which I'm ready to do if you want me to do.
Honourable members, before we get into the detail, any clarification matters that Honourable Mania?
Just a brief question of clarification. I wonder, Mr. Dlomo, if you would just once again outline, I think it is the four commissions of inquiry that predate this act. That's the, just so I can have them clearly. They begin with Piccoli. In 1995, I understand. Just so I can have absolute clarity on what Commission of Inquiry reports exist. The second question is, are those reports classified and can we have access to them? It would seem to me that they would provide a very interesting background reading in understanding this sector in preparing to deliberate on this act.
Just to repeat what you've already said, DJ, the reports.
Chairperson, I referred to the Piccoli Commission. there is another commission, the Nature Tenge. The Matthews.
The reports are classified or not?
They are classified, and they are parts that were declassified for public consumption, which is what I've referred to. The public statements issued on their contents. Which is the basis on which I'm talking.
I like this formula of yours. You've got this formula where you say, and new activities attract. New activities or functions attract new oversight. And you say then where functions or activities become obsolete, it follows then that the oversight also becomes obsolete. Is that as a formula?
I'm correct. Whatever is correct.
Anything else on the room, Capitelli?
It's a small issue. Thanks to the input. The input has said a lot about intelligence oversight, Intelligence Service Act, National Strategic Intelligence, Electronic. If you can just say something about the Secret Service Act, because I think you didn't say anything about that one, so I don't know whether it is a standalone act that has not been collapse into a thing.
DJ.
Chairperson, I think it's the special that account, the act referring to the account.
Yeah.
Chairperson, the way in which the dispensation operates is that all money bills are the responsibility of the Minister of Finance. That particular act pertains to the provision and the management of the accounts of the intelligence services. So we're not changing that, we're only changing the references as to what structures can have accounts created in keeping with the Security Services Special Account Act. It's a 1969 act. I was only a baby. And then that goes, there's supposed to be another one with which that it goes hand in hand. Those are the money accounts that are handled by the Minister of Finance. I'm not sure if I'm answering the Honourable Member adequately. I'm sure that if I'm not, with your permission, a follow-up may be made.
Honourable Member Capitelli?
Yes, it's just that you're handed this booklet when you started, so I'm reading from it. It's not because I like the Secret Service Act. It's not that I didn't hear anything about it. When you started, you were given this document of 1978. Thank you.
Chairperson, the Secret Services Act is linked to the Special Accounts Act. The Secret Services Act is a dispensation that allows the President to set up a Secret Services Committee which would advise on what aspects may require funding for us to be able to do them as a secret service. And the main aim of the Act is really to create that capacity and to enable us to then get money allocated for us to be able to undertake secret services. And I don't have the Act in front of me, but secret services are defined in the Act in the detail. But then, and of course, in the mandate of the oversight of the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, they have a responsibility of getting a report of what was approved by that committee as secret services that needed to be undertaken. They get insights into how that has worked. Chairperson.
Yeah, honourable members, the act was included in the bundle because we thought that one of the acts that the committee members would particularly have an interest in is the what we refer to as the Oversight Act, which is also in the bundle. If you look at the Oversight Act, you will see a reference there to the Secret Service Act. And so the act was included so that you could just see it's not a very long act, it's very short. It has a very simple function. So you could just get some idea when you read the Oversight Act, and the references made to the Secret Service Act, what it actually says. You don't go run around looking for the act, so that's the reason, I think, why these in the bundle. Honourable Mania.
The question to the DG, is it your view that these four commission reports ought to remain classified and cannot be made public?
That's a policy matter, that's an administrative one. I think it might be better to ask that of the minister.
Perhaps you, DG, just to set the record straight once and for all, just give us a quick and a very brief view of how declassification and that works. So that I don't want a 5 minute, I want a 1 minute. Or would you like me to say that you are not in a position, the DG is not in a position to declassify or to make available any classified material? It is the authority of those people who classified the document. So I think if you were to venture a view, you would be moving along a career threatening process. Are there any other questions from the members? We get the DJ then to get into the substance of what we're dealing with. DJ, I noticed that you started to confuse us by starting with Act 202, which is the loss. Is the last one in the bill which has been amended. As long as members are happy, I wanted to keep the thing very simple. If you look at the bill first starts by amending Act 39 of 1994. But your explanation earlier started by talking about Act 202. So I just, as long as honourable members remember that. In this bill that you have before you, three laws have been amended. The first one is Act 39 of 1994. And then a number of pages. It doesn't come out clearly, you see. For people that are not used to this, it doesn't come out clearly. Like you know, on the top of the heading there is now this, you're dealing with another act. So when you page through the letters and it all look the same, you get the impression you're dealing with one law, and really you are dealing with somewhere along the line between pages 1 and pages 34. The amendments start to change and refer to a different law. So you'll find I did try and mark it for the honourable members, but I did it in colour, and I think when the copies were made, it did not come out. But the intention was that the first law that we are amending, or attempting to amend, would be blue, and then as you page along, you'll see there is now green, and you would then immediately know that this is where we start to deal with a new law, and then the last one. So did you? Just always keep in mind that, you know, I don't know if you have the exact page where Act 39 of 1994 ends and where the other one starts. Perhaps you can also, at some stage, so I'm sure you're not going to finish Act 39 today, but perhaps at some stage you can ask us to mark in our bill exactly where it is that that process ends and we start with a new act. Over to you, DG.
Chairperson, thanks. I now would like to indicate that I am going to be talking to the presentation. Chairperson has already indicated the main amendment that we'll be focusing on when it comes to the National Strategic Intelligence Act. Act 39 of 1994, as sections 1 to 8. Then we will move on to the Intelligence Services Oversight Act 1994, sections 9 to 13. And then the Intelligence Services Act of 2002, focusing on sections 14 to 53. Chairperson, where it is indicated that a section is dealing with the amendment of names, it will mean in the bill that the service, ComSec, Academy, and Intelligence Services are deleted, and that the agency is no longer referring to the National Intelligence Agency, but rather to the State Security Agency, and that the terms Chief Executive Officer and the Director General concerned are going to be amended and replaced with a reference to the Director General. In Section 1, Chairperson, we provide for the new amendment, or new definitions rather, the agency, counterintelligence, national intelligence structures, and of course the relevant members of the national intelligence structure. We provide for the deletion of the definition of the service. We then insert new definitions such as foreign signals intelligence, intelligence, national security, security competence, state security matter, vetting field units, and vetting investigation. In Section 2, Chairperson, we align the amendment of the agency, the mandate of the agency, to the gathering, correlation, evaluation and analysis of domestic and foreign intelligence. This is a combination of the mandates of the former NIA and SAS. Secondly, it is to provide for the submission of intelligence products instead of intelligence to other departments and the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee. We provide for the functions that are currently contained in the Electronic Communications Security Pty Ltd Act, which is going to be repealed, and these are transferred to the agency to whom new functions are allocated concerning communications and cryptography. The current functions with regard to communications and cryptography are to protect and secure critical electronic communications against unauthorized access or technical, electronic, or any other related threat. To provide verification services for electronic communication security systems, products and services, and any other related services. To provide and coordinate research and development with regard to electronic communication security systems, products and services, and any other related services. To collect and analyze foreign signals intelligence in a manner prescribed in terms of regulations issued in keeping with the provisions of the Intelligence Services Act of 2002, guided by the national intelligence priorities assigned by Cabinet. The following two additional functions have also been added to the functions of the agency: to liaise with intelligence or security services or other authorities of other countries or intergovernmental forums of intelligence or security services, and subject to the regulation of interception of communications and provision of communication-related information Act of 2002, commonly referred to as RICA, to monitor or interfere with the electronic, magnetic, acoustic, or other emissions and any equipment producing such emissions, and to obtain and provide information derived from or related to such emissions or equipment and from encrypted material for the purposes of protecting and promoting the national security of the Republic. Section 3, Chapter 10, refers to the names of structures that are being amended in Section 2A of the Act, especially where it is dealing with the vetting process. The term security screening is amended to refer to vetting, which includes security screening as part of that process. Provision is made for the establishment of vetting field units by departments on the request of the agency to assist the agency with the gathering of prescribed vetting information. The issue referred to on Friday by the minister was the head of a national intelligence structure may delegate in writing the authority to issue, downgrade, or revoke clearances to other officials under his or her command. Section 4, Chairperson, places a duty on Department of State not to withhold any information from the agency which is relevant to any investigation within its legal mandate. A further duty is placed on members of the national intelligence structure to immediately transfer intelligence products to another member where such intelligence is needed for the fulfillment of a statutory function. Chairperson, may I just pause here to say the law here was not very clear what it meant. It was subject to many interpretations. And one of the things that we're doing here is not to introduce something new, is to clean the wording that was in the Act, which could not be interpreted the same way when you put lawyers in the same room. And it really was making the Act to require a lot of legal advice before basic things could be done. We think that this makes it clear. When you've got an intelligence product relating to somebody else, you don't have to hold and say, this is not something I can give. It says now, you must give it. And if somebody has got something that you need, they must not wait when you request it. They must make it available to you. This is ready to deal with the problem which was found by many commissions in the case of the United States of America, that there have been problems of stovepiping, silo mentality, and that the need to share was not the governing mantra in some of the intelligence services. We're learning from their experience. Section 5, Chairperson, provided for the coordinator for intelligence, which is now being abolished, and the head of NICOG would be its replacement. This again is to really clarify areas of responsibility, because you had the coordinator for intelligence who was at the level of a director general, then you had the director general of the organization, and the lines of accountability and reporting were creating problems. So we're seeking to clarify that. And in addition, those who would be responsible for collecting intelligence inside the country and outside the country will, together with the Director General, of the State Security Agency serve on NICOG as member. Chairperson, NICOG will therefore focus on the coordination of intelligence products, no longer this intelligence activity, which was confusing. So we hope to clarify this, and that it may only be tasked in a prescribed manner and must provide the minister with national strategic intelligence and intelligence products relating to threats to national security. Again, this issue has been touched upon in the Matthews Commission, that this issue must be clarified, and we are learning again from it and other previous committees that made recommendations. In Section 6, Chairperson, it clarifies the location of the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, and that is in the office of the Minister of State Security, and that this process would be managed through regulation, hence we say in a prescribed manner. In Section 7, Chairperson, provision is made for the issuing of the following new regulations by the Minister in consultation with the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. Again, various ministerial intelligence review committees have raised concerns about this lack of certainty in the dispensation. And learning from those recommendations, we are now providing that regulations will be issued by the Minister on the manner and form in which departmental intelligence shall be supplied to state departments. I think this came out of the Matthews Commission as well. The provision of staff required for the administration of the Act. Any matter necessary for the effective execution and administration of counterintelligence functions and the coordination and interpretation of intelligence products. Again, lesson from the 9/11 Commission. And provide for name changes in the long title of the Act. This brings me to the end of Act 39 of 1994. I will continue if you allow me to. Check.
Now, page, what is that?
On the bill, it is page 8.
I'm advised that it is page 8. We have confirmed.
Honourable members, just take a minute. Act 39 of 94, we are told, ends on page 8. And if you go then to the bottom of the page, you'll see the DG was talking about section 8, and you'll see there Section 8, and then just the last paragraph, if you look at that, the last paragraph on page 8, you'll see there they are starting with a new law now. The law there is Act 40 of 1994. So just keep in mind these things follow, and there's no lines in between, so you've got to, otherwise you think they're dealing with the same law. So perhaps you should draw a line there, a line just after that old Section 8, where the new section starts, the new law starts. Because everything above that, page 8765, is dealing with Act 39 of 1994. Some points of clarity, Honourable Members. I have an important point of clarity here. NICOG is going to be in the Minister's office. I'm not sure I understood this thing, DG. You know that the Constitution does not compel the President to appoint a minister in the field of intelligence. Because even in the Oversight Act, the minister is defined as the President or Cabinet. So, assuming that the President does not appoint a minister, does it mean that the NICOG will be in the office of the President? But I'd like for clarity, what is this meaning? Do they come together in the morning and you know, the physical presence of witness. Then I've got the Honourable Markey. Let's hear the Honourable Markey. My question is simple. It might not, you might not want to answer it, DG. You can take a look at this. If you have the answer, it's fine. Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just point of clarification. It's very difficult in this very big presentation if you don't have a page number. But can I say on in the presentation, point number 3, it says to provide for the functions that are currently contained in the electronic communications to be repealed by the Act, to be transferred to the agency, and to provide for one new function concerning communication and cryptography. I would like to understand what, where was this one covered, this new function? Is it totally new? And before, how was it dealt with? I'm not sure whether my question is clear. And then I'll go to section 4, number, would it be number 2, whereby members are compelled to transfer products to another member. If it's needed for the fulfillment of a statutory function. I think that is very broad. What type of product? Or is it clarified somewhere? Because the way it is, it's a blanket. It means you are just forced to transfer. I wonder if it's clarified or what type of products are you compelled to transfer. The very last one would be in the bill itself, section 5. Barry, the committee shall consist of the following persons, one of whom shall be designated by the minister as chairperson. But the head of NICOC, that is number A, it is not very clear for me where this head of NICOC will be coming from. Would it be one of these heads that are here, or will it be somebody else from somewhere outside these ones that are here? Because it might be they meet and they get themselves the head of NICOC, or will it be somebody chosen from somewhere else outside these that are here? And my other question is the one that you asked, Chairperson, but maybe formulated in a different way. I seem not to understand correctly, or if NICOC falls under the minister, and within NICOC itself, you've got people from other departments. From defense, from the other intelligence that are not, I mean, belong to the other department. And if those are to be under the minister, wouldn't it create a problem of control because if they fall under different departments, that might be a problem. Thank you.
Can we take the answers first and then we'll get back to the Honourable Langer and then the rest of the Honourable members?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think it's very important that we just do a little bit of a tour of history pertaining to the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee. Honourable members would recall that in 1995, on the 1st of January, the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, the South African Secret Service, and the National Intelligence Agency were established. If I'm not mistaken, around the 18th of January, President Mandela then signed the leadership and membership of the various structures within the intelligence community, appointing people across the board, because at the time there was no Minister of Intelligence. He was the person responsible for intelligence. I start there because one of the persons that we appointed was the Deputy Minister of Intelligence and Coordinator for Intelligence, Mr. John Clark. The responsibility for intelligence coordination was in his office. He was the Deputy Minister and Coordinator for Intelligence. It was then felt that there is a need to separate the political office of a Deputy Minister from that of a functionary, which is the Coordinator for Intelligence. Now, those who were involved in the negotiations would be aware that there was a lengthy debate about what that post was supposed to be called, this one of Coordinator for Intelligence. At first it was called the Secretary for Intelligence, and people felt that the nomenclature was foreign to the South African environment. They were also worried about what it meant in terms of the relationship that should exist between the Secretary for Intelligence and the Director General of the two departments that had been established at the time. So as a compromise, it was then agreed that it must be called Coordinator for Intelligence. One of the first amendments that we then tabled in 1995, which was part of the package which changed the appointment of the Joint Standing Committee from it being appointed by the President to being appointed by the President in consultation with the Speaker and the leaders of the political party. That came into being because of those discussions. So one of the things that then got cleared was the importance of separating the office of the Coordinator for Intelligence from that of the Deputy Minister. The outcome of that was that there was established this entity which was reporting to the Deputy Minister, but it was never clear from day one whether this is this a standalone department, because you see, government does not provide for standalone things. If you look at what later came into the 1996 constitution, the Chapter 9 institutions, each one is attached to the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. There is a responsible Director General, monies are channeled in a given way, the accounting responsibilities. So there was no administrative act that was put in place in the case of the Coordinator for Intelligence. So you would read in the Act of 1994, when we made the amendment, that the logistical support would be given by an interdepartmental committee, which is those coming from the police, those coming from the defense intelligence, and those coming from the National Intelligence Agency and the South African Secret Service. As a compromise, it was later agreed that in keeping with the near phase one, remember what I said earlier on, distinguished member, that we had said for one to be part of the intelligence dispensation in 1994, all had to belong to the pool in the National Intelligence Agency. So the precondition of you being migrated from into the South African Secret Service, mm-hmm. you had to be a member of the NIA. For you to be a member of NICOC, you had to be a member of the NIA. So it became a major administrative department. And then people were migrated into the new departments that we created with that understanding of that amalgamation process, which is a similar thing we're doing now. We're putting everybody into the state security agents. We don't know what the process of consultation would yield. So in the interim, it needs to be clear where they are. Are they part of the state security agency or the office of the minister? This is to clear that. Just like we have the Inspector General of Intelligence getting the money from the state security agency, but accountable to the minister and the Joint Spending Committee of Intelligence and the other responsible ministers. So it's just to clear that. That's the background why it's important to ensure that there is certainty about the location and role of the office of the coordinator. This is then the answer to the issue, Chairperson, is that it has been observed by various investigations, including the Methodist Commission, Chairperson. It has been observed that unless there is clarity about how intelligence is tasked, problems can arise in the country. So it is the reason why the coordinator has been the office of the minister is because then the command and control responsibility is clear. It does not become an issue for debate. We have had instances in the past where command and control issues have come into being with the people thinking they report to the president and therefore have to ignore the minister. It's just to really clear those kinds of challenges that have existed in the past. This issue of members, Chairperson, I think it would help if I were to read the functions of NICOC, because I believe that part of this. You see the way in which the bill is structured, it does not make for easy reading. So it's better when you are reading it in the context of the actual act. What does it say now, and what are we wanting it to say in the future? Let me start with the establishment. At the moment, the Act reads, there is hereby established a National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, which shall consist of A, there is a dash there, and then B. The A was the minister, which we later deleted. So the B is the coordinator for intelligence, appointed under Section 5.1, who shall be the chairperson. What we are amending in that section is that instead of saying the coordinator for intelligence, it shall consist of the head of intelligence appointed under Section 5.1, full stop, who shall be the administrative head of NICOC, just an administrative head. Then it says the director general of the agency. Now it would say the member responsible for the foreign intelligence or foreign intelligence division or the domestic intelligence division of the state of the agency. Those would be the members, statutory members of the agency, and then the chief of the intelligence division of the National Defense Force and the head of the intelligence division of the South African Police Service. That's all that the changes are seeking to do, to clarify the membership of NICOC in Section 4 of the Act. When it comes to the functions of NICOC, most of the functions would stay as is, except that when it comes to the production of intelligence, it's no longer going to be intelligence in general, because intelligence can mean the activity, can mean the product, or can mean the organization. So we're trying to clarify that tripartite understanding of intelligence. Now, when it says member, it means the director general or the deputy director general. So it's very clear, it's not anyone who can provide the product. It means those people who are members of NICOC. So the member here refers to the member of NICOC, that they need to give each other the report. This is to make sure that if I have information that the police need, the police must ask me and I must give. If they have the information I need, I must ask and they must give. That's what those two sections are providing for. But they are worded in a section in a manner that does not make for easy reading because of the technical nature of the amendment. But they are really straightforward. It's not anybody, it's not anyone. It's guided by the mandate. So when they ask, you have to check if they're asking for information that falls within their mandate, because this must be read in conjunction with Chapter 11 of the Constitution, which provides that no one must abide by an illegal order or instruction. So if they're asking you to do something which is illegal, you obviously would have to refuse that, even if they're intelligence products. If it's not part of their mandate, they cannot be shared. I thought that would then deal with the questions I had so far.
Thank you, Chair. I obviously have a number of questions, but I'd like to focus on the whole question of the State Security Agency's mandate. The Director General correctly points out that much of many of the amendments focusing on NICOC are in line with the Matthews Commission report, but where it seems that there's a major diversion is on the whole question of the mandate. Now, Chair, you'll recall in that report, one of the findings was that the mandate of the intelligence services, particularly the NIA, was too broad and open to interpretation. And one of the recommendations was that there be a shift to a designated threat approach, which seems to me to make sense. Was that recommendation, or does this amendment bill use a designated threat approach, and if it doesn't, why does it not do so? That's the first point. Because, Chair, it seems to me that not only do we maintain the existing mandates of the various branches of the Intelligence Services under this Amendment Act, but we in fact add functions. Now, there's a variance between today's presentation and the presentation by the Minister. The Minister said that there were three new functions. The Director General says there are two new functions. If we take the three new functions, those had to deal with foreign signals intelligence, liaison with intelligence services, and then this rather obscure monitoring and interfering with electromagnetic and acoustic emissions. So my second question would be, would the DG please explain which institution will be responsible for these three new functions and why these three new functions are necessary? Then my last question in respect of the mandate is, if we look at the counterintelligence mandate, the definition of counterintelligence is amended in this piece of legislation to include the word sedition. Am I correct that the State Security Agency will now, as part of its mandate, be responsible for countering sedition. If that is true, what does sedition mean?
Before I pass on, honourable member, are you saying you're not familiar with the word sedition and you don't know what it means? Because it has a meaning in our criminal law. There is a crime as sedition, and unless you are suggesting that it might mean something other than the crime of sedition, you say you're not familiar with this crime. But that seems to be quite a simple question.
Chair, but it's going somewhere. I do know what sedition means. I wonder whether the Director General knows what sedition means and why it's in the Act.
Honourable Mm-hmm. Kabadeli?
I'm worried about this next commission, because we're told about four commissions, and we again requested that, and we didn't say no, that you get the copies. So at the end of the day, it will be just above our heads, this Matthews Commission. We don't have a copy of that. If we need a copy, let's have a copy of all the other commissions so that you can really see who said what and why after which commission. Otherwise, we're narrowing our mind to one specific commission, and it don't help us to do the bill correctly.
Let me get clarity from the DGDG. The minister tells us, on good authority, I take it, that this Matthew Commission report has got no standing in cabinet.
Government.
As a JSCI too, we were obliged to follow that position report. We were not in a position to give such a report any status if the architects of the report felt that the report should be given a status. We could not give it a status higher than the architects themselves. So I'm just concerned now, what is it then? I can understand that one sometimes reads newspapers that do seek for their information in the lower chapters and the lower dark corners of society for their news, and that some of the things that the report are sometimes so dreadful, but there are some that sometimes find comfort in reading these things. I think when we read it, that we read it with the understanding that we're giving it some form of credibility. I think it's just a question of curiosity. But when you say something has got no status, and you make reference to this thing, I'm just wondering what type of status is no status then if there is a reference made. Is there a... Perhaps you're not the one to give the explanation, and I will appreciate it if that is in fact the case. Let us get the minister to clarify that position, because it is a cabinet. It is a cabinet position, and I don't want you to be pressed into a position where you start taking unnecessary liberties here to answer for cabinet. So I would caution you, DG, because we're getting to a situation now where I myself am not understanding that this thing that has got no status has been covered here as having been consulted. I know if you say we consulted it and it had didn't say much, and so we moved on to some other reports that then we get some clarity. But do we want to go into that? I'm still talking on the I'm not disturbing you when you talk. So, can we just get, I would be pleased if you leave this explanation as to the status to the minister. Unless you tell me that you have the authority of cabinet to express the view, what really is meant by this non-status, because as a JSCI, we were clear what non-status means. It's got no status. In fact, for our purposes, we don't even mention it anymore because we got no authority to mention it. The cabinet said it doesn't have any significance for as far as ACON's concerned. So who are we to give it some status when the architects? So just on that issue, the issue of the whether sedition or not, I think the Honourable Mayne has cleared it himself. He says he doesn't understand. He was just trying to trick you, I think, in what they were saying in the nice words. He's just trying to see whether you understood. So, but he does understand. I thought he didn't understand. So I think, can we get you just, you want to, on a point of order, as a, on my order, because there's nobody else talking. Point of order.
Chair, I don't think we need to throw the baby out of, with the bathwater here. I think the DG's position is, the minister says,
remember, you're on a point of order, okay?
Yes.
You need to convince me that there's something wrong with the procedure that I'm busy with. I'm not asking you now to explain things. Tell me the procedure that I was following now in explaining this question of the Matthews report and the status, that there's something wrong in the manner in which I did it. That would be a point of order.
Well,
you would have an opportunity to address the issues you want to address, but not as a point of order. I'm going to stop you if it's not a point of order.
I think you were possibly massaging the facts, Chair. The Minister's view and the DG's view are entirely consistent. The Matthews Commission is a no-status report. The DG was clear. I am clear. But the fact is that for an ordinary member of the public like me, the Matthews Commission report is the only authoritative commission of inquiry into the intelligence services, and it is going to naturally be the benchmark for these deliberations. We're not going to be able to wish it away. It raised serious questions in about the intelligence services, major problems, and I want to know whether those major problems have been addressed in this amendment bill. Because if they haven't, then Parliament must
send
us.
Honourable, you made your point. It's not a point of order. I hear what you're saying. So your point of order is rejected. You will at some stage be allowed, if you wish, to take those matters. Take those matters up. Ramaslami, are you also on this point of order?
I'm not talking point of order.
No, because I wanted the DG to answer before we take further questions.
I'm on that point.
Yes, so you are. Okay, fine. If it's on that point.
Answer with my question as well.
The Honourable. Was the Honourable Stibber not before? Yes. The Honourable Stibber. I've got a very strict following rule. So you was first.
Thank you.
Sorry, we'll get to you.
Just to get back to Nicock. If you look at section 5.3, Nicock will only be responsible for the coordinating of intelligence products and will not be responsible for the prioritization of intelligence activities anymore. My question is, who will then be? That's the one. Then, if we look at the National Strategic Intelligence Act 39 of 94, five, coordinator for intelligence. One, the president shall appoint a person coordinator for intelligence, which shall subject to the directions and supervision of the minister. Now, is it by saying that the president shall appoint? Will that does that also say that we, because in the Nowhere in the Constitution does it refer to the coordinating committee, but it, the president is responsible for the intelligence service. Do we have to change the Constitution also, or how are we going to accommodate that?
The Honourable Mohammed Wakani.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. My question was more to do a follow-up on the Mirthi Commission. I think the DG explained that the other commissions are classified. The whether it's Nesitenje, whether it's all the commissions were Naba, they're all classified. Then the Mirthi Commission, its report with no status. So let's say there's no status at the moment. In the question I asked the minister on when he was making a presentation, his response was that the in the process moving forward, they are part of the Mirthi Commission issues that are going to be taken on board, whether it's in the issue of the white paper process or the review process, that they are part that will be considered, much as it has never stated. Now, I know that the discussion that we're having now is to whether it has status or no status, but what in terms of what the minister and I think the DG was talking about, that in Kevin's presentation, was that there are this particular point that was making, it was also raised in the Mirthi Commission. So my point is the issue whether the status or no status, at the moment the Mirthi Commission does have valuable issues or information or solution that we need to find generally in the intelligence, and we're going to be able to borrow from it, even though we're not necessarily going to borrow it, giving it any status by virtue that it's been on paper, it's written. Now, is that characterization still the correct one? Because if I'm correct, then the reference, if we going through the presentation and you say this was raised by the Mirthi Commission, even if it's no status, is that welcome? Is that something that is welcomed? The last thing I want to ask about the Mirthi Commission, I know the minister, I think the intro was that the what went wrong with the Mirthi Commission, and I'm not suggesting that we discuss the commission itself. He said what went wrong is the end product. At the end of that commission, he said the report or something was leaked, or information was leaked, which then made the basically rendered the report it basically deleted or basically ran across the status of the report and declared almost a criminal act by doing that. Now, that's all he said. The end product. The conduct of maybe of people who are dealing with the report handled wrongly and leaked the report. That's what happened, which then basically called to question the status of the report given the fact that it's been leaked out. But it does not necessarily then mean, for me, when I was sitting there as a layperson listening to the minister speak, it is not so much about the content and the finding that was found to have been wrong or far off the mark. What has been found to be incorrectly and illegal conduct was a conduct of people who handled the report at the end of the product. Now, if that is then the case, accepting that it's illegal and therefore it's got no status, it has a different status in terms of the content than the actual authority in terms of using and borrowing it. Now, if that is correct, Chair, I wanted to ask the DG to comment on that, because I know that twice he mentioned that the Mirthi report did make this point, and we are addressing this point in this particular way. And therefore, if that is correct, it is not necessarily incorrect to borrow a characterization of the solution in the report in finding and improving the process of making the law and moving forward. then the last thing that the DG is really the question about, in the slides where we were talking about there is people who are becoming the members of the, they were members of this committee. That you, I did want to ask on page 7, I think the, on NICOP, there's section 4 where it describes DG, Director General of the Agency, Domestic Division, Foreign Division. I did want to ask, I had a look at the presentation that was presented last week. As you amalgamate and have, or consolidate, and have one department, which is something that, of course, we support, we don't have a problem with that, you're going to end up with four or three divisions. Looking at it here, it looks like it's almost like four legs that is going to stand on, the department is going to stand up. Is it the intention, therefore, that the those legs would be represented with the, what is called heads of the domestic, heads of foreign, and heads, at what level is that description? The level of a, because one issue was the issue about the people, DG, all mushrooming of DGs. Is it what is going to, is it going to be downgrading to what level? What of senior officials in state, if so to speak. Thanks, Chair.
Point of order,
I think we wasted a lot of time talking about the Metal Commission, which we were told even last week that this thing doesn't have any stake. Meaning that for me, I wouldn't have a reason to go and read that so that we can come here and discuss it. If there are things within it that are important, why don't we just introduce that as points that we can discuss relevant to the bill itself? Why should we talk about something that it's, for me, it's like Honorable Manier reading a novel and then coming in here saying we must discuss that novel that doesn't have relevance to this thing. And we waste so much time on it. It's clear that it doesn't have any weight here. If somebody needs to discuss it, maybe during some other time, not here. We are dealing with this thing. It keeps on cropping up. And I don't know it. I can't discuss it because I never read it and I don't have any reason why I should read it. That's a point of order.
The point is taken, Honourable Member. DG, your minister has expressed his view on the report that the Honourable Members are raising. The manner in which he expressed it was not very elaborate. He didn't go into great length. But in the JSCI, and this puts Honourable Members at a disadvantage, we do understand exactly what he meant. He didn't give that explanation in great detail. I do not feel that it is your duty to come and explain something which the minister perhaps failed to explain or failed to elaborate on. I think the appropriate manner in which to deal with this matter of concern now is to leave it in the minister's hands. When the minister is here, the minister see the appropriate manner in which to deal with it. I'm not saying the matter is closed, but the honourable members are correct. As to what is meant by no status, and I think the DG was being friendly when he was trying to, in his presentation, give some form of reference to the report which is under discussion now. Whether it was, as some members are trying to imply now, giving credibility to the report, is something which I would not want to voice my view on. I think it's the minister that should be dealing with this matter. I can see no reason why honourable members, when dealing with the problem, would want to say, but they have seen in a certain report that there was proposals. These proposals are not consistent with this there. We think that those proposals in the report are better than the ones in the bill, and I would have no problem in dealing with the situation then if you can motivate, because it might in fact convince the members of the committee that the proposal that you put on board is in fact a better one. It could be. There are issues in the bill which are raising concern as we speak, and we will address that. We will not proceed in a manner that is unbecoming of members of parliament. So, DG, I'm therefore taking the authority to order you not to interfere with the minister's authority. And we will call the minister here, and we will let the minister clarify the position, and that will be the basis on which we will proceed in future. So, as for the other questions, may you proceed to answer. Is there anybody else that want to ask before I hand over to the DG? DG, within the parameters of the point of order that I have allowed, and within the parameters of what I have said, you may proceed to answer.
Chairperson, thanks. With regard to the issue of the national intelligence priorities, from day one, NICOG never said intelligence priorities. It was the cabinet, because this is a priority setting and budget function. So the tasking of intelligence the world over has never been by intelligence themselves. The first step in the intelligence cycle is one of the determination of intelligence requirements, and those would arise from the constitution, the legislation, and the regulations and the directives, and then of course the taskings that come from the political leadership. So it has always been the responsibility of the cabinet. Of course, from time to time, there's an aspect of self-tasking that happens on the side of intelligence when you are attending to the priorities that you are given, and you come across information that is critical for government to be aware of. You obviously will package that and provide it to government, which we call self-tasking in the context of the priority area that you have been assigned. So that continues to be the way in which this matter is dealt with. There obviously would be a change, Chairperson, and in the process of appointing the coordinator for intelligence, we are proposing one of the things that, maybe just to provide the background, one of the problems that we have realized is that there are functions that the President has to do because of constitutional obligation. But things have, over the years, just been moving to the President's office, including things that need not necessarily be done by the President. The Constitution does not require that the coordinator for intelligence be appointed by the President. This has become practice because in the Public Service Act, directors general are appointed by the President. So it came as a default rather than as a constitutionally mandated issue. And this practice is now being reviewed in government to say, let the constitutional duties of the President be conducted by the President, and let those that belong to other people, they must do the work. Now the Constitution provides that the President may appoint a woman or a man to be responsible for intelligence if he does not assume the duty himself. And what he wants is that when somebody is appointed in that position must also take responsibility for the work that has to be done to facilitate intelligence coordination. Hence, changing it to the head of the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee and locating it in the office of the minister so that command and control can be clarified. That is the spirit of the change. Well, the other issues fall in the sphere of your living, so I will not comment on them, except to withdraw the impression I might have created, which is not in keeping with the non-status nature of the document that shall remain unreferred to.
The question of sedition, is there something you want to say about sedition? I don't know.
You can't talk about it in that.
I can say something about counterintelligence. There is a wrong understanding of counterintelligence as something defensive. There are two aspects to counterintelligence. There is offensive counterintelligence and there is defensive counterintelligence. Our view is that we've hitherto been focusing on defensive counterintelligence and have not taken sufficient space to address this matter. We're seeking to reintroduce the balance between the offensive and the defensive. We have chaperoned in this bill taken into account the new definition of national security agreed to by Parliament in the process of approving the Protection of State Information Bill. And the last part of that definition expressly state what national security excludes. So lawful political activity and candidacy, lobbying, etc., would not form part of it. And so there should be no concern arising with the inclusion of sedition as part of the package, because there clearly is an express exclusion of lawful political activities in the understanding of national security. And that's really the point of departure. Thank you.
Do members? Yes, Honourable Main.
I think that this is a very important issue, and we're going to have to look at this very carefully. And the Director General's reply certainly doesn't put my mind at rest. I do understand that sedition is a common law crime. I understand that it is very broadly defined, that it includes elements of speech, and that it was in fact, because it was so broad, it was in fact done away with in the United Kingdom in 1972. But the real question here is, why was it necessary to include sedition in the definition of counterintelligence? What is the mischief? What threat is out there that would be covered by sedition?
I thought the DG just explained how I understood it in the context of national security. But DG?
There's a very simple thing, which is in the public domain. We are currently having a case that is going through pertaining to allegations of people who in this country have been involved in organizing activities of insurrection in other countries. Part of what has actually been done in some instances didn't only ended up in acts of terrorism and bombings and all those kinds of things. So it's not an issue that we, you know, there's a very clear mischief that we're seeking to address. And this thing is not new also, Chaperson, because if you go back and you look at various, we had referred this issue to the Law Commission, if I'm not mistaken, around 1996. The product of this investigation was kept in house, had not gone out in terms of the initial investigation that was done. So it's not something that we have just cropped up. If you look at the speech, if I'm not mistaken, of the private speech of Minister Nkandla of 1999, there are issues of concern that had actually been raised that will be touching on some of these issues. But this thing is very clear. There is a case being dealt with. There's somebody currently incarcerated here in South Africa who actually has been involved in that. In 2010, there's an openly known incident. Somebody on whose life an attempt was made here in South Africa, and part of that is linked to allegations that the person may be involved in organizing activities to unseat a head of state in another country. So all of these things are there. So the mischief is very clear, and that's why I linked it directly with lawful political activities, because when the issue is being raised, we are quite aware that the immediate reaction is to say, is the political space being closed? And the fact of the matter is that it's not about us. We sometimes are too concerned about our space unduly, when the threat actually is coming from elsewhere, and we are, and our territory is being used for destabilizing and organizing and funding insurrectionary activities in other countries.
Hello, my name is DG. When you talk about intelligence, then there is a perception amongst common and simple people that there's something funny and something suspicious going on. When you talk about counterintelligence, they believe there's something bad happening. There's killings and hit squads and this is a perception there. I talk to people that I meet on a day-to-day basis. They counterintelligence, you know. Perhaps for the benefit of the committee, you spoke about the offensive and the protective aspects of counterintelligence. Very quickly, 1 minute, what sorts of things would you be doing if you were involved in a simple counterintelligence operation? So that we clear on what it is we're talking about here, that you know, because intelligence is sitting down and you're sort of gathering, but when you count, it seems that you're out there really doing something that is of major concern.
Harrison, there are basically two main functions that I'll talk about in counterintelligence. One is counter-espionage, that is preventing people who want to spy on the country, and the second aspect is security, that is measures we take to protect ourselves and our infrastructure, our people, against threats that would arise from hostile and other forces. So counterintelligence really, I'm just being simple, not simplistic, just simple, is security and counter-espionage. But there are other elements, like non-proliferation. It's in our interest that nuclear issues, that our nuclear capabilities, etc., are protected, and that as signatories to the non-proliferation treaty, we live up to our obligations of avoiding proliferation, and of course the spilling of our own technologies. Minister has spoken about the fact that we're a leader in medical isotopes, and that there are a lot of people who are looking at getting that technology. And so the steps we take to prevent those who want to get access to these things are part of our counterintelligence activity. Thanks, Chairman.
One of the members, this one of them, and then I'll get you.
I'm requesting that we proceed, because it's not going to be fair if all of us are going to request for the class of intelligence and we request to be educated on what intelligence means, word by word. Let's proceed according to the bill that we're dealing with. Otherwise, really.
Sir, I don't think it will be healthy in this committee that we listen to one individual interrogating the try to for more than 30 minutes an hour. What about the other people who want to be team? How are we going to go forward?
Honourable members, to all of you, if you have a question and you raise your hand, I will give you an opportunity to be speak. I don't want to be accused of limiting people who wish to be heard. Now, I do take the point, Honourable Fischler, that for some reason or another, it would become disturbing on one side of that one person is, and I'm very much aware of that, and I do not intend to let that situation get out of hand. But we have reached a situation, honourable members, where I think that there are members that are obligations that are to follow soon now, and I did not intend to proceed further. Now, we have come to the end of this particular piece of legislation, and so I would want to, at this stage, find it an appropriate place to adjourn. I was getting to that, and hence I was just trying to round up on the questions and perhaps some of the explanations that have not been dealt with yet. Honourable Mania wants to be heard. Can I hear first before you are allowed to put the question so that it is not an unnecessary delaying situation again on the mind? What is it that you have in mind on the mind?
In fact, Chair, I don't wish to try the Honourable Fischler's passions, but this is a very important issue. I really, since you are wrapping up, I did ask a question about the two or three new functions, for an explanation about why they are necessary and what former institutions were responsible for them. And then just to say, I want to come back to this question of sedition, because the DG is quite wrong. Sedition is a crime that has got to do with conduct or speech relating to inciting rebellion against the state, not a foreign state. So the case to which he refers is not valid in this case. We can pursue this matter at another point, Chair. I'm quite comfortable with that. But it is very, very, very dangerous.
And you have your views on Romania. We shall, if it is necessary, we shall interrogate your views too. Honourable Mark, you now, and also we entered this debate. See, I want to wrap up. You want to tell me?
Thank you, Jefferson. I think I missed on some points here. My understanding is that the DG is reporting to the minister. I would like to understand the relationship of the DG of intelligence with the president. Because at some stage there was a problem there. Can the DG report directly to the president if there's something that needs to be dealt with? And something along those lines, in the explanation of the bill itself, that is the last page is there, it is said that the DG is the chief financial officer. Is that not a different thing altogether from accounting officer? I would understand the accounting officer, but does accounting officer mean he is the chief financial officer? Along with that question, thank you.
DG. You will note those questions and the issues raised by the Honourable Mania. Those matters will stand over until Friday. When we meet on Friday, is the minister going to be here on Friday? The minister is coming back on the 21st. I don't think you should answer that. Let's say the questions will stand over till Friday and we shall see what happens. We shall communicate with the minister. He seems to have indicated he'll be back on Thursday. I don't have any apology for Friday, only for today. So, can we let... however we look at it, honourable members, the time is up. And I'd like to adjourn now to give those honourable members an opportunity to go to other places where they are expected to turn up now. Just to draw the honourable members' attention to the minutes. You have 12 minutes. Please go through the minutes. When we meet on Friday, we'll just, if there are any alterations, will you please raise your alteration and the possible proposal so that we can finalize those minutes on Friday. And then we will deal with whatever is outstanding. I shall liaise with the minister's office and the minister's office to see what the position is going to be on Friday. But as things stand, there is a meeting on Friday and the venue is. Anyway, you will be given. I'm told that the venue on Friday is M46 ground floor, Mark's building. That's Friday at 9 o'clock. So, honourable members, if there's nothing urgent that you want to raise this meeting, then stands adjourned.